Support for The Trend on WNIN comes from members of the Local Programming Fund. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Today we're joined by the new executive director of the Evansville Department of Metropolitan Development. Philip Hooper is a Warwick County native who's moved back to the area after living in Indianapolis for the past 10 years, where he most recently was a senior project manager in that city's Department of Metropolitan Development. And Philip Hooper, great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Micah. It's exciting to be on The Trend. It's a great show, and I'm honored to be here.
Well, I want to ask you about this nickname that you have for Evansville. You call it your true love city. What do you love about Evansville?
Well, I say it's my true love city because, you know, it's really one of four cities that are really close to my heart that I sort of know the best. That would be, I guess in chronological order, Evansville, Chicago. Then I lived in Indianapolis, and then spent some great quality time in Philadelphia. And those are kind of my four cities. But Evansville is my true love city. It's where my roots are. It's where my home is. And my heart's always kind of been in Evansville. And, you know, being a 20-something in Indianapolis who's really geeked up about Evansville, sometimes people ask why or, you know, what's going on? Or, you know, do you just want to move back to be close to family? And it's like, no offense, family. I've got great family. But and we're thrilled to be living close to our family. But it's more than that. There's just something about the city that I've been a champion of. I felt like sort of an unofficial ambassador. You know, I had a picture of the skyline in Evansville in my office in Indy, and I just love telling people about Evansville. And so I kind of started saying, "It's my true love city" to people, and they would just kind of sort of accept it, like, okay, you know, it's kind of like the wild draw four card. You just sort of like can't argue with it. It's like okay, you know. So, and I am happy to say that I do own truelovecity.com. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but it's fun to think I own part of cyberspace. So,
well, and the four cities you name are well, the three others are very different from Evansville in that those are tier one cities. Those are big cities, Indy, Philly, Chicago.
Yeah, I would consider Indy a tier.
Maybe tier two. Yeah, Indy's more like a Louisville, a Columbus. Where do you put Evansville? Is Evansville a big town or is it a small city?
Evansville is absolutely a small city, and I think it's important that we think of it as such. Demographically, speaking of trends, great show, great name, because there are trends that in different industries you're in, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the trends for urbanists, people who love cities, people who live in cities, small towns are more than likely shrinking and dying. Cities, people are moving back to cities. Some rust belt, or now some people are calling it the water belt as a more positive recognition of the asset of water in the rust belt. But, you know, some rust belt cities have obviously struggled. And Evansville has been a strong little city. It's another thing I like to say about Evansville is that it's a strong little city, which goes back to really pre-Civil War economic sort of realities. But I place Evansville as I guess you could consider a third tier city, and it's kind of a small fish in the regional network. You know, you go out two or three hours and you've got like Nashville and Louisville and Indianapolis and St. Louis, and we are sort of the smaller one. So I think there's some identity issues there with the folks who grew up in Evansville, you know, constantly looking at these other cities in the sort of regional, fanning out regionally and thinking, oh man, like we're not cool because, you know, we're not Louisville, you know, and it's, they're fundamentally different.
You know, that ties in an interesting way to what happened, some comments I heard when I moved here 4 years ago, and I moved here for this job, and people would ask me if I'm from here, and I'd say, no, I moved here, and they would express sorrow or disappointment. They say, oh, I'm sorry you moved here, and I thought, what is that self-esteem issue about? I mean, and that's what you're getting at, that there's a self-esteem problem here.
Unfortunately, that's true. And the Young Urban Professionals group here in town recently has conducted a survey of sorts that kind of looked into that. And I've talked to other people in your shoes as well who are from another city and moved here for a job and really like it and enjoy the riverfront and enjoy running on the trail, enjoy the assets that are downtown. And maybe it's a virtue of maybe folks who've traveled to other cities and can comparatively kind of compare and contrast, maybe view it differently. But Unfortunately, there seems to be some truth in that. Some folks here are kind of hard on it. I think some of that is just a rock and roll rebellion part of youth. You know, you listen to Bruce Springsteen and you got to get
out of town.
Can I say hell out of here?
I think you can say that.
It is a lyric in Bruce Springsteen. You know, you got to get the hell out of here. And it's just like, yeah, where I'm from is got to move on. But you know, literally I've heard people who grew up in Chicago say that about Chicago, that, it's really lame. And they talk about how much better like New York or Paris is, you know. Uh-huh. It's like, are you kidding me?
Grass is always greener somewhere else.
But we definitely are, like I say, a smaller city, the smallest city in that sort of regional, mm-hmm. sort of 2 or 3 hour spoke network. But we certainly are a regional city. We're the capital city of the tri-state, you know?
So what do you see as some of the real assets? I mean, you put on your urban planning hat here, and what do you see as the strengths of this city?
Oh, gee, I mean, I could talk for the rest of 20 minutes about what I see as the strengths of Evansville. Let's back up and start. There's a book called Producers and Proletariats. It's a Harvard economist's doctoral dissertation that he put in a book, and it's comparing the economies of Evansville and New Albany. Hmm. And I'm not smart enough to really understand everything he said in the book, right? But it compared the pre and post Civil War economies of Evansville and New Albany. And long story short, it's a book that really gets into some of the labor history of Evansville. Very fascinating book. Lots of great statistics and charts about the makeup of different labor forces and things. But Evansville had a diversified economy, and New Albany had all its eggs in the ship paddle wheel boat basket. And Evansville was able to emerge through the Industrial Revolution as a stronger city because they've had that that diverse economy. And so is that causally related to why our unemployment is lower than the state? You know, always kind of a couple points lower than the state. Maybe, you know, again, we're a strong little city, and there's nothing wrong with being a city. Unfortunately, in the 60s and 70s, the word city kind of got kind of dirty. And some of this goes
because it's a crime area.
Yeah, and some of this goes back to Industrial Revolution. You know, Ellen G. White, the founder of Seventh Day Adventism, said that men should grow beards because it cleans the air of our great cities. And there's this like idea, this in post-Industrial Revolution, that cities are dirty. You know, we got to get out to the country where it's like 15 degrees cooler and the air's cleaner. You know, and so we're still healing from that. You know, cities historically for thousands of years has been where people gather to worship, to have fun, to live, to work, and experience humanity together, you know, shared existence. And the places that people go to for bed and breakfasts are in traditional cities. So one of our strengths is, you know, we're a traditional city. Mm-hmm. Another strength is we are, for whatever reason, and we may have the river to thank for this, but we are less sprawled out than Indianapolis or Fort Wayne. And you look at the statistics for population of Pigeon Township from 1950 to today compared to Indianapolis's Center Township, and their population from 1950. And you can see that, and this is unfortunate, but Center Township in Marion County lost 60 to 65% of its population since 1950. And that's just what a blow to the gut. Like any wonder then that we have these urban struggles? I mean, we're literally abandoning the city as fast as we can finance development on the fringe.
But what about Evansville?
Evansville, it sounds crazy to say only, but it's only lost 48%.
A mere.
But that is a difference to Pigeon Township of 10,000 people. Hmm. So had we, can I use the word trend again? Have we followed the same sort of pattern of Marion County's Center Township, we would have 10,000 fewer people in Pigeon Township. Can you imagine if 10,000 people just got up and left? That's the abandonment that Indianapolis is still dealing with. Fortunately, we have some successful models to look at for Indianapolis for downtown, focusing resources and really focusing on downtown like a laser. But you drive around the neighborhoods around downtown Indianapolis, and they have a bigger abandonment issue. Conversely, if Indianapolis had only lost 48%, they would have 50,000 more people if they had followed sort of our trend. So that's another strength, I think.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have to take a break here. We're talking with Evansville DMD Director Philip Hooper, and we'll have more in just a minute. This is The Trend.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM and WNIN.org. Support for the program comes from Cirque du Soleil, presenting Kidam, a girl's escape into a world of imagination, coming to the Ford Center April 26th. Tickets and information now available through Ticketmaster and thefordcenter.com. And through a grant from the Charles and Jan Stimtonoggle family, who encourage your support of public broadcasting.
This is The Trend. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Still ahead, the tricks behind a basketball trick shot video that's raising awareness of youth mentoring. Right now we're talking with Philip Hooper. He's the new executive director of the Evansville Department of Metropolitan Development. And just before I cut you off at the break, you were talking about the assets that Evansville has as a city. And one of that is greater density than some other cities like in Indianapolis, for instance.
Yeah, that's correct. And I talked about some of the economic strengths that we have, continually a lower unemployment, strong economy, and less abandonment. That's not maybe a real positive one. Saying, well, we're less worse than, you know. But that's a real factor. And so to get to some specifics, and apologizing for maybe rambling, I never do that. I think you see the effect of that less sprawl in places like North Maine and West Franklin. And I absolutely promise you that name the appendage you don't want to cut off. And, you know, neighborhoods in Indianapolis would cut off that appendage to have the commercial corridor, neighborhood commercial corridor strength of North Maine and West Franklin. You have a neighborhood a mile or so from downtown, that on West Franklin has Paul's Menswear, you know, Thomas's Shoes. You can get your shoes shined. I mean, the business diversity on West Franklin is, and the architectural, a lot of that is the old town of Lamasco to think, but that is not even a per capita better than Indianapolis. There is no neighborhood that has that architectural variety and that neighborhood commercial corridor strength of business diversity. And even North Maine with the significant housing concerns that you can have in Jacobsville and some challenges that we're working through and some exciting quality of life planning we're doing in Jacobsville. But you look at Taroni's and the cake baking hardware store, apologize for forgetting the name, but just north of Taroni's, the coffee shop, DeLeghi's, that you can, don't quote me on this, but I've heard this from multiple sources, that you can take a turkey to the Pit Stop Barbecue, and they'll smoke it for you for $8. You get a great barbecue place. And then you have the third oldest baseball stadium
in continuing
use
up the street.
That is centennial in 2015. So those neighborhood businesses don't exist in the urban core of Indianapolis. And maybe that's because Indianapolis went more vertical than we did. I don't know. But that's something that Evansville should be proud of. And when people who are city lovers, who that is a growing trend, come to Evansville, they're going to drive Columbia and see the deer head and see, you know, go up to Hilltop and see the tap and see these urban buildings. There's a greater percentage of old commercial neighborhood buildings in Evansville than in Indy. In Indy, this sort of all been crunched. And so the trend I mentioned is one, maybe it's an asset or a transition to a recent Associated Press that was picked up a couple times in the Courier Press, but that cities are strengthening and losing ground to suburbs around the country. Gas prices affect of the, you know, is at play there. I've got a spreadsheet I made that I can show you. If you work downtown and decide to live in the Haney's Corner Arts District here, when we get that going again, I'll show you how much mortgage buying power you're sacrificing to live out where you live. and we can change gas prices. What if it goes up to $5? And I can show you, you know, or that's time with your family and, you know, additional shopping dollars or what have you. So I think that's a trend that a wave that is happening across the country. And we have to sort of pick ourselves up a bit and kind of get some more confidence about ourselves and paddle. I love surfing analogies, but you have to paddle to catch a wave. You can't just sit there. The wave's coming. But if you just sit there on your board, you can't catch the wave. You have to start paddling. And we've got to start paddling to catch some of these trends and these waves.
But we've got a board.
We have a board. We have a beautiful traditional city board, beautiful riverfront. I know it's challenging. It's the tightest curve in the river system. But we have this beautiful riverfront that's gigantic. And microbrewing is a trend that the large brewers are losing ground nationally to this. And some people think I'm a crazy beer geek. I'm actually not that crazy of a beer geek, but we've seen probably 100 jobs, definitely over 50. And everyone I talk to is like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 100 jobs in Indianapolis over the last maybe 4 years from microbreweries opening up, little craft breweries opening up. And we're finally getting our first competition to Taroni's. Love Taroni's, but the Tin Man Brewery is opening up later this year.
On West Franklin.
Yeah, just east of the creek. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely great to see. That's local jobs, that's local money, and that's a trend that we need to start paddling to catch. There's no reason to think that in 3 or 4 years we couldn't have our own 20 to 30 new jobs in the local beer market.
Let's get to a few specifics. We only have a couple of minutes left here, but I want to ask you about, in particular, the Front Door Pride program, which you are renaming. You're getting rid of the name Front Door Pride. You're continuing the work, but changing the name.
Yeah, we were portrayed, it's a difficult conversation to have because it was an effective brand that the media picked up and started using in ways that I don't think were intended originally, but the original program has already ended. We're not ending the Front Door Pride program. The original Front Door Pride program was to spend $5,000 of riverboat money on the front of a house and try to inspire other people who didn't get the money to fix up their house too. And those psychological impacts of places being improved is a real factor in community development. But it wasn't enough. It didn't work for whatever reasons. And years ago, they stopped that program, but they kept the name to refer to any HUD program that we use, which are the same programs that cities across the country use, the Community Development Block Grant Program, the Home Investment Partnership Program. And so it's a bit like having a polo shirt and stitching another logo over it and making people think that you made that shirt. We didn't make the shirt. And one reason it's bad is that I think it portrays a misunderstanding of what those programs are. And people, there's a poverty stigma with this community development work. And people think that.
But many, many people are eligible for these, right?
49% of families in Vandenberg County are eligible for these funds. Now, there are different locational restrictions and things, but it's federal money, there's always strings, but 49%. And that's not to say, again, I told you, we're a strong little city, lower unemployment. 49% of our families aren't poor, but people think that these formerly Front Door Pride homes were for people, maybe more of like the Habitat home kind of family bracket, or, you know, people who were on food stamps, you know, and some people thought that the homes were being given to people, you know, and we portray that sometimes when we try to pat ourselves on the back with a, oh, we're giving these people a hand up and this is great. And that's, you should celebrate your community development successes, but it can also be patronizing when we try to pat ourselves on the back and say we're giving them a gift. And it's like, we're using this tool that other cities, in Indianapolis, for example, just uses. And it's becoming a part, in Indianapolis, it's become a part of just like the cool scene. If you're interested in the city because environmentally you think it's good to support cities, or historically or theologically you're trying to revive the city or whatever, it's much more of a household understanding in Indianapolis kind of what CDCs do, what they work. If you're a public school teacher, you can probably get some free money for these programs. You know, any family of four that makes $50,000 or less can qualify for these programs. And it's about getting a range of incomes in these neighborhoods and kind of jumpstarting these neighborhoods.
I want to, in just 30 seconds, and I know that's not very much time to answer this, but how do you measure success in your office?
By communicating better what we do. And we could work with USI to do a survey, and we probably should. I know Habitat's done some great use of surveys here. But you could measure the understanding that people have about DMD. I want a greater understanding. I want, and I don't know how to measure this, but I want more city champions everywhere. I'm a huge city champion and sometimes can give my friends a hard time if they don't live in the city. I'm kind of persuade them to move downtown. But I need more people in Elberfeld, where I'm currently living with my in-laws. We're about to move downtown or to the Riverside neighborhood. I need more people in Elberfeld realizing that it's important for Elberfeld because it's important for the region to have a strong downtown and thriving neighborhoods around downtown. It's absolutely critical. So we need city champions in the country. We need city champions in the suburbs. And we've got to have new partnerships and new collaborations to make this happen.
Lots more to talk about. We'll have you back on the show at a future date to continue our conversation. That's Philip Hooper. He's the executive director of the Evansville Department of Metropolitan Development. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I look forward to coming back. Thank you.
And it's time now for the B segment, when we turn to our associate producer and engineer, Tony Voss, and he gets to bring us something fun. And this week, if you'll pardon the pun, it's more fun with fungi.
That's right, Micah. We just can't get enough of them. So I talked with Dr. Katie Winsett of USI about a very unique kind of fungus that some trees literally cannot live without. I'll let her tell us what they are and what they do.
These are the mycorrhizal fungi. So these are symbiotic fungi that connect with plant roots. So most fungi you think about as decomposers. You learn in school that they decompose plant litter on the forest floor. And these don't decompose anything. They are connected to the roots of trees and plants and share nutrients with trees and plants. So they're actually helping the living plants.
What types of trees tend to have this fungi symbiotically living with them?
Well, around here, all of your oak trees, all of your pine trees, beech trees have this relationship. And when I say oak trees, I mean all the oak trees in your yard will have this relationship with the fungus underground. And that's why you have a lot of oak-dominated forests, because these oaks are connected to each other by these fungi, and they all do very well.
Okay, and these are some fairly notable types of fungi and specific types of mushrooms that we would be familiar with.
Right. The part that we see is when you go out in the woods and you see mushrooms on the ground and they're very nice looking, those are these fungi. So if you think about your boletes and Amanita, even truffles can form mycorrhizal associations. So these are the common fungi that you see on the forest floor, and the part of it you're not seeing is the connection to the trees.
This isn't just something that could happen. As far as both the trees and I guess the fungi are concerned, this is kind of necessary.
Yeah. When you think about commercial tree production, so you have a lot of pine plantations. And when you do pine for timber, they'll actually inoculate the soil where they're going to put the trees with this fungus so that the saplings will establish. Because these trees need the nutrients that the fungus can give to them through their roots to be successful.
What's the fungus doing for the tree, and then what's the tree providing the fungus?
Underneath the soil that you're not seeing is what's called a hyphal network. And the hyphae are thread-like things. If you think about the mold on bread, it's thread-like. You have the same thing in the soil for these fungi. And these hyphae are actually attached to the root of a tree. So you have little tiny roots coming off of the tree, and the hyphae attach to those roots. So material from the fungus in the hyphae can get into the tree. So the fungus is going to provide water and minerals that they can get from the soil. And the tree is going to provide sugar so that the fungus can metabolize the sugar, because trees produce sugar through photosynthesis. So they're trading these nutrients back and forth. What the tree can't get, the fungus can. And what the fungus can't get, the tree can give to the fungus.
And because it's symbiotic, there's no real negative impact for the tree that this fungus is there, but there are some instances where these types of fungi can be perceived as invasive.
there's an interesting thing going on in the southern hemisphere. One of the common mushrooms you'll find here is called Amanita muscaria. And this is the one that has the red cap with the white dots on cartoons. This fungus, it is not native to the southern hemisphere. This is a northern hemisphere fungus. But because of commercial tree plantations, trees from the northern hemisphere have been taken to the southern hemisphere. And in the soil along with those trees were the hyphae for this fungus. And so Amanita muscaria has been introduced into the southern hemisphere. And this fungus will form this association with lots of different kinds of trees. So they're finding it in native forests in Australia and New Zealand where it shouldn't be. What's very interesting is it's not harming the trees. It's not harming the forest, so far as we know. It's actually still providing the same good service. The thought is, what is it doing to the other mycorrhizal fungi? The southern beech, Nothofagus, has mycorrhizal associations with native fungi. So this system is already set up. So is this fungus coming in and displacing the native mycorrhizals? So it could, in fact, be harming the populations of native fungi, but not the trees themselves. I'm a science genius girl. I'm on the science fair. I
wear a white lab coat. And over on the Trend Facebook page, you can see a picture of some mycorrhizal fungi that Katie dug up for us from her very own front yard. I told her not to go to such lengths for our show, but honestly, that's just something she would have been doing anyway. Search for the Trend on Facebook, like our page, and check out the event posting for our upcoming roadshow. Thanks, Micah.
Thanks, Tony. We're going to turn our attention now to YouTube. So let me preface this next conversation by saying you can find the video in question on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WNIN Trend. The video in question is nearly 6 minutes of the most unlikely, impossible-looking basketball trick shots, like throwing a ball over a house and making a basket on the other side, or lobbing a ball from so far away it takes almost 4 seconds to reach the basket. Well, University of Evansville student Nick Farr and six of his classmates made the video, and Nick is here to tell us how. Welcome, Nick.
Nice to meet you.
And we're also joined by the executive director of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Ohio Valley, Linda Reed. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thank you.
And she's here because the trick shots are really just the hook to get people to watch statistics about child poverty and mentoring. But first, the burning question for Nick Farr. Nick, how did you make those crazy shots?
Well, it's very interesting that we didn't spend more than an hour on any one shot. And to be honest, a lot of it is just a lot of luck.
How did you come up with these shots? I mean, you know, to give people context, if people haven't seen the video yet, and you need to watch it at some point, but, you know, you have a moving truck going by and someone throws a ball from it. Or like I said, you know, someone chucks a ball over a house to the basket on the other side. How did you come up with those ideas?
A lot of the ideas we come up with in our dorm room, and a lot of it is also improvising. We, like one time we were just driving down the Lloyd and we saw an empty Roberts Stadium parking lot. And decided that, I think we need to do a moving truck shot with the basketball goal. Just improvising like that.
And you had your own basketball setup, your backboard and hoop and all that, and you took it around town.
Right. We have a basketball goal that we load in a pickup truck, just a normal pickup truck. And we strap it down in our truck and just drive around town and try and find spots that we feel like would be a good trick shot.
So you're driving along downtown and you see a parking garage and think, oh, that would be great to throw a ball off the roof of that over to the other side of the street and make a basket.
Yeah, you could say that. we just have a great creative minds and feel like we can do just about anything with a basketball.
Did you have any shots that you couldn't make? Obviously, those didn't make it in the video.
Actually, we didn't have any shot that we didn't make at all. We made all of them in under an hour, like I said, and we made all of them that we tried as well.
Wow. the seven of you who made these shots, are you guys good at normal basketball?
We play basketball 3 times a week at U of V, just pick up games with other guys at U of V. But I wouldn't necessarily say that we're, you know, top of the line.
Do you guys play, you know, I don't know, what's the game called, pig or horse or whatever? Do you guys play that?
Yeah, we definitely play horse every once in a while, and we get pretty competitive in it as well.
I can imagine with these crazy. So those are maybe kind of the practice run for some of these bigger shots.
Yeah, a lot of us like to joke around and say that, you know, one person is better than all the others when really we're all just about the same.
Do you have a favorite shot that you guys made in the video?
I do, actually. The very last shot in our video, Eric Teppin, who is the goalie at the University of Evansville, kicks a 30-yard field goal, and it takes place at Harrison High School. But he also didn't just make the field goal. There's a basketball goal about 15 yards behind the field goal. And you can imagine 15 yards plus 30-yard field goal is about a 45-yard field goal. And it goes in a basketball hoop.
The football just, it drops right in.
Right in.
How many tries did that take?
You'd be surprised. It took 5 tries.
5 tries?
Yeah. This is a shot that we knew, though, was going to be incredible. So we were willing to spend hours on it, 2 to 3 hours, maybe even longer. But whenever he hit it on the 5th try, we were just stunned and we didn't know what to do.
And you guys are pretty ecstatic in the video every time you make one of these shots.
Yeah. I mean, we put a lot of effort into these shots. You know, some of the shots take more than 30 tries, but we put a lot of effort into them, so it's really a lot of energy goes into it whenever we actually make it.
But a 45-foot field goal into a basket, how do you know in advance that that's even possible?
You know, some of these we don't know it's possible. We just go out there and try it. It's like I said, it's a lot of luck.
But you were able to do all of them anyway, even though you didn't know what the outcome would be.
Yeah. just a lot of luck. That's the only thing I can say.
Now, this video is just about a month old now, and how many people have seen it?
We're approaching 7,500 views as of right now.
And how many views do you want?
We like to get close to 50,000 views. That's a bit of a stretch, but we're also in the making of another video. And we'd hope that would gain this first video a few views as well.
And what's going to be in the next video?
We created a team on standuptocancer.com, and we decided on a goal of $10,000. And in the next video, there's going to be more trick shots. And like the first video, there's going to be statistics about cancer or some sort of thing about that. And we'd like to raise $10,000 towards Stand Up to Cancer.
And you knew in advance, before you made this first trick shot video, which is called Splash Effect, because that's what the net does when you make a perfect basket, right?
Correct.
You knew in advance that you were doing this to raise awareness for Big Brothers Big Sisters. How did that come about?
I was just, you know, sitting down one day thinking about how we were going to do this video, and it was before we even made it, and I decided that, you know, anybody can just make a trick shot video, but we wanted to do ours and make ours unique. And so we wanted to do ours for a good cause. And so I started looking up statistics about poverty in the United States, and they were very staggering. I mean, you hear a lot of stories about poverty in third world nations and those things, but you don't realize how much poverty we have here in the United States. And so after I looked up those statistics, I knew of Big Brothers Big Sisters because I had a cousin that was involved in it. And so I went to Big Brothers Big Sisters and showed them the video directly. And that's how it just started.
Oh, and maybe this is the perfect time to bring Linda Reed into the conversation, the executive director of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Ohio Valley, based here in Evansville. And so, Linda, one day Nick walks through your doors with this video footage and says, I want to collaborate with you on this. What was your reaction?
I was very willing to work with, you know, a young man from U of E on a project for Big Brothers Big Sisters, because it's all about finding mentors for our kids. So I thought this would be a good outlet to do that. I was impressed by the shots that they did and what I thought, you know, probably the tremendous amount of time they spent doing it. But as he said, they're smart, they have great potential, so they were able to accomplish a lot and probably not as much time as you had anticipated.
Have you ever marketed Big Brothers Big Sisters this way?
No, we have not.
And it seems a very 21st century way to market an organization, right? I mean, trick shots don't really have anything to do with mentoring per se, but spliced in between are these statistics about poverty and mentoring.
Right.
And at the end, there's this plea to donate.
Right. You know, the trick shots and mentoring probably don't have a lot to do with each other, except for the fact that these six or seven young men, they were smart, had great potential. That's the same way as our children. They're smart kids, and they have great potential. They just need a role model to teach them.
Have you had any response to the video? Have you heard from people?
Not that have specifically said they've seen the video. We have received maybe a donation or two on PayPal, and they haven't linked themselves to the video, but it may be very well part of that.
Mm-hmm. The statistics that are in the video are striking. I mean, Nick, you mentioned the poverty rate. One of those statistics, I think, is that the U.S. has the third highest poverty rate of any Western or industrial nation.
In developed nations, yes.
Developed nation, yeah. Did you know these things before you made the video?
No, I had no idea of all the statistics out there, and that's what really opened my eyes.
And then you drill down to the local level, and you're looking at things like 1 in 4 kids in Vandenberg County live in poverty.
Yes.
And that's up 7% over 5 years. What's going on?
Just the economy, for one thing. A lot more single-parent homes, and, you know, they're good parents. They just work one or two jobs and three jobs sometimes and go to school. So their children need more role models in their lives.
We're talking basketball trick shots and Big Brothers Big Sisters on the Trend. We'll have more after a break. Back in a minute. Stay tuned.
This is The Trend on WNIN.org and WNIN-FM. Support for the program comes from Romaine Crosspoint Buick GMC Cadillac Subaru, where you get the Romaine value promise. Located at I-164 and the Lloyd or online at myromaine.com. And from the Bluegrass Museum in Owensboro, presenting Romp, featuring performances by Old Crow Medicine Show, Carolina Chocolate Drops, Vince Gill, Punch Brothers, and Lonesome River Band. June 28th, 29th, and 30th. Details at rompfest.org or 888-MY-BANJO.
This is The Trend. I'm Micah Schweitzer. We're talking about a trick shot video that raises awareness for Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Ohio Valley. And Linda Reed, the executive director of that organization, is here, as well as Nick Farr, who made the video. And just before the break, Linda Reed, we were mentioning that 1 in 4 Vandenberg County kids are in poverty, and that rate has gone up in recent years. How does that relate to the work that you do? Do you find that you have more kids in need of mentoring?
Yes, we do. There's more children that are, I guess, applying to have a big brother or big sister. Unfortunately, we have a waiting list of over 200 children that need a big brother or want a big brother or big sister.
Is that typical to have that big of a waiting list?
It is. In order to match those children, it would take more case managers. So we need to get more funding in order to hire case managers to interview the client, the parent, and the volunteer. It's a pretty extensive process. A process, because we interview the volunteer, takes about 45 minutes or an hour. We also do orientation and training, and takes another hour and a half. We also go to the child's home and a parent, and we interview both of them just to assess their family situation. And so we know what the neighborhood is like where we're sending the volunteers. Mm-hmm. We also assess the volunteer's home in case they were to take the child to their home for an outing. So there's a lot of things involved, because once we interview them, we take their interests, their hobbies, their likes, and their dislikes into account, and we figure out who would be the best, most suitable match for the big or the little, because we want it to be a relationship that will last.
So that's pretty intensive. I mean, so you're saying that if you had 200 people step up today to say, great, let's get rid of that waiting list, that would cause another kind of a problem.
Yeah, our capacity to grow would have to be immediately fixed if we wanted to match 200 children with volunteers, because it does take a while. There's a waiting process, because we do have a criminal history background check of our volunteers. which is a national state sex offenders vehicle records check in a county. And we also ask for 3 character references, and we follow up on all of those.
Because you don't want to be in a situation where a child is put at risk with, right, with an unknown adult or an unknown quantity, because they can be on their own together, right?
Yes, they are on their own together. It's a one-on-one relationship. If we wouldn't feel comfortable with a volunteer to match with their own child, then chances are, we're not going to match them with somebody else's.
Where do you get your funding?
Most of our funding is from United Ways and in different counties that we serve. We do serve 9 counties. So we receive funding from Southwestern Indiana United Way, Perry County United Way, Knox County, Posey County, and Henderson County.
But no government funding?
No government or state funding. We have a signature fundraiser called Bow for Kids Sake that we do every year. It's in March. This year we had about 110 teams, which is 5 members on each team. We raised over $60,000. Henderson County had one on the same day, and they were just as successful as we were. Posey County had one in October, and they did very good for their first year. So that's our major fundraiser. We try to do other fundraisers throughout the year. Right now we're involved with the United Leasing Championship PGA Tour. It's going to be held at the Victoria.
Yeah.
And if people would like to purchase a ticket in order to go to the PGA Tour for 4 days, if you go onto the United Leasing website, you purchase a ticket for $35, they're given the opportunity to choose a charity. So if you choose whichever charity you choose, of course, if you choose Big Brothers Big Sisters, then we will receive the biggest portion of that fee would come to us.
So if someone wanted to act in some way to get involved with Big Brothers Big Sisters, becoming a mentor, it sounds like, is not necessarily... do you need more mentors? I mean, you're saying you'd have a problem matching you had a big influx of
if
mentors.
If they're gradual, we match them as they come in. Mm-hmm. We probably have 6 or 10 in the process of being matched right now.
So you can always use more mentors.
Yes, we can always use more mentors, but to take 200 at once would be nearly impossible.
What's the average length of a mentor or a big brother, a big and little relationship?
Well, we ask all of our mentors to commit to at least 1 year. We like them to go up to 18 months. Many of our relationships last 5 years, 6 years. We have some that have lasted 10 or 12 years. We have couple matches, like a husband and wife may match with 2 children. We have one that matched with a brother and sister. They stayed with those children until they've each graduated high school and made a tremendous impact on their lives.
What kinds of impacts do you see?
Well, we've had children who have come from families of being incarcerated, are having some drug addictions, alcohol abuse. One child specifically had a history, not her, but her family had a history of being incarcerated and living in poverty all their lives. And this particular girl has since graduated high school, joined the Army, and has graduated the top of her class, or the unit, and was promoted, and then is now serving in a mission field.
So... all because of a positive adult role model, you're
yes,
saying?
Yes, all because of her big sister and big brother. Well, her parents, you know, they were there for her too. Her mom was, but having the influence of this big sister and big brother, who the big brother is a former Marine, they really influenced what she did after she graduated high school.
Is it mainly at-risk kids that you're looking to pair with mentors?
It is, and at-risk is a term we've always used, but as he said earlier, I like the word... children with potential now. They are children with potential or with promise. They just have adverse situations in their lives that not every child experiences. They do live in low poverty income. Probably 46% of the children in Vandenberg County do live in poverty.
And based on free and reduced lunch statistics,
yes,
from the schools.
Right.
Yeah. Do families ever feel uncomfortable with bringing another, you know, essentially a stranger into the family in that sense, into a relationship with their kid?
Yes, some do. And then in order to kind of break them into it slowly, we may start out as a school mentor. It's where the child and the volunteer only meet at lunch during school hours. And then once they get the relationship building, they may over the summer meet at the child's home, just gradually get the parent used to the volunteer so they can trust that person. The community-based program is where the volunteer would go to the child's home, pick them up, and they would do something in the community. So we have had parents that have asked that that volunteer meet with their child at their home for the first couple of months until mm-hmm. they're used to it, until they feel comfortable.
Do the relationships always go well, or are there ever ones that just don't work out?
There are some that don't work out. Just personalities of the child and the volunteer are, you know, maybe the for some reason the child or family may not be cooperative. They may not understand the involvement of the program, but not very often, very seldom.
Hmm. How many matches do you have right now?
Right now we have 340 children who are in a match relationship. And that is over 9 counties that we serve. Mm-hmm.
Does that include the schools?
Includes the schools.
Okay. So what's the tell me a little bit about how that works with the schools. Is that a partnership with the school districts?
Yes, with EVSC. Well, in all of our counties we have some school mentoring, but we do have to build partnerships with the school corporations so that we know what time would be best for our volunteers to meet with the children. At most schools it is at lunchtime. But at some schools, it can be a different time period depending on the child's schedule. And it's once a week.
You've talked a little bit about what the benefits are for the kids who are in the mentoring relationship. What do you see? How do you see the relationship affecting the adults?
The adults come back with their eyes kind of glowing and sparkly, and they say they get more out of it. They feel like they've got more rewards from being in the program than they've given to the child. Just knowing that they're making a difference and seeing that child's improve and get their eyes lit up, just be more interested in things. Yeah, it's very rewarding. We have some companies that may have several employees in the program, and those employees come back and they're more energized and more excited, and they feel like they've accomplished something during their day.
Linda Reed is the executive director of Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Ohio Valley, based here in Evansville, serving a 9-county area in our region. And Nick Farr, we spoke with earlier, he's the director of the Splash Effect video. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
And you can find Nick's video on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WNIN Trend. Stay tuned. It's the Arts Notebook just ahead.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM and WNIN.org. Support for the program today comes from Evansville Day School, preparing for college, preparing for life for over 60 years. Information online at evansvilledayschool.org. And from the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra and Chorus, presenting the classic series finale, The Titan, featuring Bernstein's Chichester Psalms and Mahler's First Symphony, Titan, Saturday, April 28th at 7 p.m. at the Victory Theater. Tickets at 812-425-5050 or evansvillephilharmonic.org.
This is The Trend on WNIN. I'm Micah Schweitzer. It's time now for the Arts Notebook, and Roger McBain from the Courier and Press is here. Hi, Roger.
Good afternoon.
And Roger, the arts are in bloom this spring weekend, so let's start out in New Harmony. And until I read your article, which was in Thursday's paper, I always thought Quick Draw had to do with Western gun duels, but not so.
That's right. There are no holsters here, but lots of easels in this Quick Draw event. It's a new event in the 14th annual Plein Air First Brush of Spring paint out in New Harmony, Indiana. And for this event was last night. Artists had 2 hours to complete a canvas for a competition.
And then they're judged on what they've managed to put together in 2 hours.
I wasn't out there, but yeah, they started at 5, ended at 7, and they had to turn them in, and then the judges picked the winners.
And the event continues today and tomorrow.
That's right. It's a 3-day event. It opened Thursday. It concludes tomorrow with some sales, a plein air annual sale that runs 9 a.m. to noon. And then the people who've been out painting out in the open air, which is what plein air means in French, the old French teacher knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
will be selling their work, or showing their work at 2:30 p.m. And a lot of it is for sale, actually, too. But there's an awards reception at 2:30 p.m. tomorrow, too.
Okay, so even though Quick Draw has to do with painting and not six shooters, there is a chance to see Shakespeare in Spurs this weekend. Tell me about this.
The Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, his play about the Battle of the Sexes, gets a Western treatment in a production being brought by the National Players. A touring company has been going for 63 years out of Maryland. They come here every year, usually to St. Meinrad Arch Abbey, but this year there's renovation going on, so they're bringing two shows to Forest Park High School in Ferdinand. And they're bringing the Taming of the Shrew, and then tomorrow night they're going to bring Steinbeck's Depression-era drama Of Mice and Men.
Which begs the question, are these plays linked by their Western themes or by their rodent themes?
I suppose it's rodent themes only for those of us with who like cheesy puns.
I had to say a cheesy pun earlier in the show, so maybe I'm on a roll here. Now, those are at the Forest Park High School in Ferdinand, and what time are those playing?
The plays will start at 7:30 tonight. Taming of the Shrew is 7:30 tonight. Of Mice and Men, 7:30 p.m. tomorrow. They say get there 30 minutes before to pick up your program, which will be your ticket to the hall, and that the hall opens 20 minutes before the shows.
Okay, and on over to Newburg and music. There's a new music festival taking place this weekend.
That's right. It's called the Bluegrass and Blues in the Burg at Angel Mounds show. And they always talk about Newburg, but actually I think Angel Mounds has an Evansville address. It's just almost
It's right
in
on the
Newburg.
Border.
Yeah. But this is a two-day event headlined by a band called Split Lip Rayfield from Wichita, Kansas, and another band called Biscuit Miller and the Mix. They're playing tonight, and Split Lip is playing tomorrow night with a lineup of other acts from all around.
Okay, and you can look up the full itinerary, Bluegrass and Blues in the Burg. They've got a website. And we have just a minute or so left, so let's turn our attention to some comedy happening. This a PBS star coming.
Yeah, 7 p.m. Tuesday in the Victory. Red Green, the star of the new Red Green show, that backwoods, I should say. Some would say backwards, gender-centric comedy about the Possum Lodge, a 15-year Canadian show that ran on public television on our own station here in Evansville. I watched it.
And his real name is Steve Smith. So does he actually like fixing things like he does in the show?
He says he likes it when things break. He said it gives me a chance to fix them, and when I do, I feel better about myself.
All right, so Red Green at the Victory Theater next week here in Evansville. And you can find articles and lots more details about these events in Thursday's Courier and Press and also online at couriercress.com. Roger McBain joins us every week for the Arts Notebook, and thanks for being here as usual.
Thank you.
Next week, the hows and whys of solar power and some spring gardening advice. You can send questions, comments, and ideas to the show. Just click on the trend at WNIN.org. And you can also find podcasts there, as well as at couriercress.com. Plus, we're on iTunes and in the NPR podcast directory. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. Ryan Reynolds is our producer at the Courier and Press. Tony Voss is the show's associate producer and engineer. Jeffrey Osman composed the theme music. I'm Micah Schweitzer. We'll talk next week. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.